Instead of buying six bananas, I buy two. Instead of eating a whole banana, I cut them in half.
Alaskans wonder if high grocery prices will continue in the new year. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, January 2nd, 2023. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a new air traffic control tower in Anchorage will mark a major milestone, but only by coincidence.
We weren't trying to achieve the tallest building in Alaska. It just so happens to be that.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Do you need health insurance? United Way Healthcare Navigators are here to help you understand your new Affordable Care Act coverage options and opportunity for savings. You can call 211 or text GETCOVEREDAK to 898-211 to connect to a healthcare navigator. Enrollment is open now through January 15th. Call 211 today. This message sponsored by United Way of Anchorage.
A controversial auction for rights to drill for oil and gas in the federal waters of Cook Inlet drew only a single bid. The Alaska Beacon reports that Hilcorp Alaska, the dominant oil and gas operator in the Cook Inlet Basin, submitted the sole bid in the lease sale held by the Department of Interior's Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. Nearly 1 million acres had been offered in the auction. BOEM said Hilcorp's bid totaled just about $64,000. Hilcorp already holds 14 federal leases in the inlet. They were acquired in a 2017 sale in which Hilcorp was also the only bidder. Hilcorp also submitted the only six bids received in a special state lease sale in Cook Inlet, submitting bids totaling about $360,000, according to preliminary results. The federal lease sale, previously canceled, was held under congressional mandate. It also drew a lawsuit last week that seeks to overturn the decision to hold it. The sale was originally scheduled for earlier in the year, but BOEM in May called it off, citing a lack of industry interest. That cancellation drew rebukes from Alaska politicians and from other pro-oil politicians. The Inflation Reduction Act, signed by President Biden in August, included a provision mandating the Cook Inlet sale be held by the end of 2022. The lawsuit, filed on December 21st, alleges studies leading up to the sale were rushed and inadequate. The lawsuit cites climate-warming greenhouse gas emissions, dangers for endangered Cook Inlet beluga whales, and other negative impacts it says would result from the sale. A state economist says inflation in 2022 is going to come in at around 8%. Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports on what that means for some regular Alaskans at the grocery store.
Bobby Superb is on his way out of the Car's Safeway in Midtown Anchorage, awkwardly carrying an armful of loose groceries, a jug of juice, some pastries, a bag of tamales, and two bananas.
Just a few items. I avoid getting a bag because they charge for it. Just, you know, odds and ends, the last of my money.
He's a retired merchant mariner and school teacher on a fixed income. He says he's eligible for food benefits, but he hasn't gotten them because of the state's months-long processing backlog.
It was lovely during the holidays to be left without.
You've probably noticed lots of prices going up in the last year, especially groceries. Different analysts have different opinions on what will happen to them going forward, but looking back, U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported food prices in November were up 12% compared to the year before. Superb says it's forced him to eat less.
Meat products, fresh fruit and vegetables, because they're expensive. You know, so you just, instead of buying six bananas, I buy two. Instead of eating a whole banana, I cut them in half. Wow. Make them last longer.
He's lost a lot of weight. Even his dog, Jersey, isn't eating as well.
Now he eats nothing but plain dog food. Oh, he used to mix hamburger with his food, but now he just eats. I can't afford his little extras.
A lot of spending habits have changed in the last few years.
I'm more cheap now.
Ryan Green says he also cut back on how much meat he buys from about twice a week to once or twice a month.
Yeah. What are you substituting in instead?
Just drive-thru now.
So you're buying less groceries and more fast food?
Yeah, it's cheaper.
What?
I go to Costco a lot too, where that Costco food court, that's the cheapest. That gets me through.
He says he fasts sometimes too.
It's good that gas is going down, so that helps.
Neil Fried is a longtime economist who works for the Alaska Department of Labor. He says he's never seen an economy like this between pandemic lockdowns, massive federal relief efforts, and the recovery now.
And I'm glad I'm still an economist during this period, because this was one of the most remarkable things to happen and watch and measure that I've ever had happen during all the decades I've been doing this.
Fried says for about a decade, inflation was about 1.5%. This year, he says it'll be around 8%.
Most recessions and dramatic things are surprises, but that was such a fast, quick surprise that, and something that we've never, ever had to deal with. It was just, you know.
Of course, inflation affects pay, too. Are wages keeping pace with price increases in Alaska?
It depends. I mean, wages have generally increased, but overall, probably not as fast as inflation.
Fried says for 2023, he expects Alaska's economic recovery to continue, with billions of federal dollars bound for the state from the giant federal infrastructure law. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
A man died in a car crash in Anchorage late Sunday that injured two others, according to police. Anchorage police said in a statement that the man, who has not been publicly identified, was driving a Nissan Maxima southbound on Arctic Boulevard near Raspberry Road when the car collided with a Ford Escape SUV about 9:45 p.m. Sunday. He was pronounced dead at the scene, and a woman and a juvenile in the Escape suffered non-life-threatening injuries and were taken to a hospital, police said. There were no traffic citations issued in the incident, according to the police statement. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, inside a Fairbanks hotel's Aurora Globe.
So it functions like a kid's, like a giant bouncy house, and the continuously operating blower inside brings in air from up above.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Physical therapists are movement and rehabilitation experts. Choosing a physical therapist is a personal choice. A referral is not required in Alaska for most insurances. Use the physical therapy professionals in your community to reach your goals. Now, the State Physical Therapy Association is offering physical therapy in Anchorage at no charge for those with financial barriers to care. Learn more at aptaalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Physical Therapy Association.
Work is underway on what will be Alaska's tallest building. A new air traffic control tower is planned for the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. It'll stand at 306 feet, that's 10 feet higher than the current record holder, the ConocoPhillips building in downtown Anchorage. The new tower will be almost double the height of the current control tower, with an expanded cab or upper viewing area that will accommodate 10 operators, while the current cab is only built for 6. Ross Tim, a senior architect at Stantec, the firm recently selected by the Federal Aviation Administration to design the new tower, says the designers didn't set out to break any records.
We knew it was going to be up there. That final height was determined by the cab eye level, so we weren't trying to achieve the tallest building in Alaska. It just so happens to be that.
Tim says the FAA chose a new location and optimal height for better viewing of the entire runway complex, including the Lake Hood Seaplane Airport that it also oversees. He says the FAA determined the current control tower was inadequate to handle the growth in traffic, especially cargo traffic, since it was built in 1978.
So the current tower wasn't built to the FAA current standards. It has obsolete electronic equipment, mechanical equipment, and as well as it doesn't have nearly enough operator positions.
Tim says the tower will also include a new radar facility at its base that controls air traffic throughout the Anchorage airspace, including from Merrill Field and J-Bear. Tim says the FAA has not yet announced a cost estimate for the project, but he says the airport will not have to share the cost. He says design should be completed by May 2024, with construction expected to begin later that year. A Juneau woman is searching for her grandmother's regalia that was stolen from her apartment while she was traveling during the holidays. Her family is offering a large reward with no questions asked. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry reports.
When Nehka Kuge Taja Revels came home to Juneau after a week away, she found her front door broken open, her house ransacked, and her most prized possessions gone. The next day, friends are over to help her clean the mess.
I left my house perfectly clean, and they are cleaning it. They slept in my bed, they moved the sheets, stripped the sheets, so they're taking care of that.
It looks like someone lived there for days. They took expensive things like purses, camping gear, her PlayStation 5, and her trademark MAC lipstick. What she wants back the most, though, is her grandmother's regalia. Revels says it's an important piece of Huna's history, from a period she calls, quote, a kind of renaissance in the 1960s. And it was one of the few things she had left from her grandmother. Now she's looking for the missing regalia online and in pawn shops, and says her family is offering a large reward, quote, no questions asked. She says this isn't the first time her family has lost important heirlooms, and the thefts remind her of the trauma her family has endured for generations. Revels says that her grandmother started making the regalia in the 1960s, alongside a few other women in Huna. The only materials she had access to were polyester fabric from the local Five and Dime and acrylic paint from the school.
We just keep adding more and more and more on. And by the time you see her at the first celebration in 82, you see this beautiful piece of regalia that's finished. She danced at the White House in this regalia. Since her passing, everyone recognized Annabelle Revels' regalia.
Revels was named after her grandmother, who died when she was a teenager. After she inherited the regalia, she wore it to every graduation and major event in her life. She said it allowed her to be closer to her grandmother's memory.
And we have so little from her. We lost so many of her possessions when she died because her house got ransacked during her funeral. And like the Huna fire happened.
The thieves use a crowbar to force open her front door. Revels says she came back to her things thrown around and sticky handprints all over the kitchen. Her beading supplies had been dug through and the solid gold beads were taken, as well as otter pelts and moccasin tops that were beaded by her great-grandmother in the 1940s. She called the police and they took her microwave to see if they could get prints. Chloe Cavanaugh is one of the friends helping Revels clean the house. They cart out a mattress topper that the thieves had slept on. Cavanaugh has hope that they could find the regalia. She's bought back stolen regalia for people before.
A lot of the times it just is people get like, think they're buying a nice thing and it's like something super sentimental to someone else. But yeah, it was like for her, it was a dance robe that she had like taught tons of kids how to dance in, and it was used by her community.
Revels says that when she came home to the mess, Cavanaugh had to tear her away from digging through her things over and over looking for the regalia.
Chloe dragged me out of here because I was like crying on my knees, going through all the clothing, being like, I just have to find the regalia. It was not there. It was just the garment bag ripped open.
But Revels isn't as confident that they might find it. She hopes someone will recognize the regalia or come forward if they know anything.
Like, have courage, say something. Like, it would mean so much. My family's gone through so much.
Another irreplaceable thing she's missing is a cherished bracelet that she was given as a baby, signed by the late silver craftsman Scott Douglas. Revels said police told her on Thursday night that they have a person of interest in the case. She says they recovered a few of her belongings, but not the regalia. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
Anyone with information about the stolen items can call the Juneau Crime Line at 907-523-7700. The Telephone Hill neighborhood in downtown Juneau is being returned to the city. As reported by the Alaska Beacon, the state of Alaska transferred ownership of the multi-million dollar plot of land last week. It was once envisioned for a new Capitol building. The transfer was required under legislation written by Senator Jesse Keel and passed by lawmakers last year. That ended an almost 50-year-old project intended to construct a new Capitol for the Alaska legislature. The transfer won't be final until city officials sign an affidavit releasing the state from liability, which would allow the deed to be signed over. Juneau officials have already been considering their options, including using the property for a new city hall. In October, Juneau voters rejected a proposal to borrow $35 million to build that new city hall. But because the proposition failed by less than 3%, city manager Rory Watt said city officials believe voters may have liked the idea of a new city hall, just not the particular plan on the ballot. Even though he thinks Juneau needs a larger city hall, Keel said he doesn't care for the idea of putting it on Telephone Hill. Telephone Hill is Juneau's oldest historic neighborhood. It's home to the oldest still occupied house in Alaska, the Edward Webster House, built in 1882. 17 people live in the neighborhood. None of the homes in the area are eligible for historic recognition because they've been modified, but they all date from before 1920 and are some of the oldest homes still standing in Alaska.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Do you need health insurance? United Way Healthcare Navigators are here to help you understand your new Affordable Care Act coverage options and opportunity for savings. You can call 211 or text GETCOVEREDAK to 898-211 to connect to a healthcare navigator. Enrollment is open now through January 15th. Call 211 today. This message sponsored by United Way of Anchorage.
$2.5 million in federal funding will help pay for construction of a new health clinic in Healy. The money included in an omnibus appropriations bill passed by Congress is going to the nonprofit Interior Community Health Center, which serves the Denali Borough out of a primary care clinic in Healy.
We are the only civilian year-round medical facility with integrated behavioral health in the borough.
Interior Community Health Center CEO Cheryl Kilgore says the funds will enable the Healy operation to move from rented second-floor space in the Tri-Valley Community Center to a new facility specifically designated for healthcare.
When COVID hit, it became very clear that buildings needed to have a certain kind of ventilation. So building a new clinic allows us to address some of these infection control issues better, and it allows us to expand some services.
Kilgore says those include dental and behavioral health care. She says the new center will also have room for refrigerated pharmaceutical storage and a place for visiting providers to stay. She adds that the single-story facility on the park's highway will provide better exposure and access.
Being on the highway will give us much better visibility so that if people have a need, they can see us and come in. And it's all on one floor.
Kilgore says the Interior Community Health Center already owns a lot for the new facility, and the $2.5 million in federal funding combined with $1 million the organization previously raised leaves it about $2 million short of the new center's currently estimated $5.5 million construction cost. To cover the gap, Kilgore says they will likely look to some of the same government and private funders that supported construction of their much larger facility in Fairbanks over 20 years ago.
When we moved into the Fairbanks building, it was debt-free, and that's our goal for the Healy Clinic, is to be totally debt-free.
Kilgore anticipates that construction of the new Healy Health Center to begin at earliest in 2024. The Eastern Aleutians received record rainfall in December. More than a week of solid rain led to flooding and mudslides in Unalaska, the region's largest city. But as KUCB's Theo Greenlee reports, the community of around 4,500 knows how to weather the storm.
Okay, so where does the water normally come up to, you said?
Actually, this year, it is the fullest it's been for the first time since I've been here, and we moved in. It's been almost 40 years.
40 years in this spot, and this is the highest it's been?
Yeah.
Gussie Dushkin and Brian Hatch live in a house in downtown Unalaska, right off Unalaska Lake.
The water is flooded like this.
Even though flooding isn't anything new here, Dushkin says this year feels different.
stuff. But yeah, this happens like every 3 years, it seems like, when it gets really heavy rain.
But not quite this high.
No, this is the highest it's been, so.
There used to be a fish house that was right out there when it would flood like this deep.
Like for drying and stuff?
Yeah, dry fish rack.
Dry fish rack? It would tip over. So after the water would recede, I'd have to go back out there with help and lift it back up. And the water would come up to like the edge of the house, but never like this high.
My house sits on pilings, so the water has never touched the flooring. So, but this year I'm a little nervous because this is the highest it's been ever. So, yeah.
A typical December brings about 6 inches of rain to the community. But this year, by the third week of December, Unalaska had already received about 10 inches. Daily rain records were broken, and this month is already in the top 10 wettest Decembers on record, with still a few days left. The reason the rain hit so hard is because of an atmospheric river. Michael Lawson is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, and he says a band of low pressure acted like a funnel to allow weather systems to move from the south to the north, directly across the eastern Aleutians.
It's generally not as impactful if, you know, that stream is only over you for an hour or 2 hours or even a day, but when these things kind of set up in the same area and stall out, they can cause problems like you're seeing out there right now.
Lawson says this particular atmospheric river was a couple hundred miles wide, stretching roughly from Nikolsky to Sand Point.
Even though it's moving, it's kind of pivoting overhead as low pressure systems work their way up along it and just continue to bring constant rain and wind, for that matter, to the area.
Despite the undue weather, the city of Unalaska didn't receive excessive damage. Mudslides on a few roads led to closures, and Unisys Seafood relocated some of their residents. But the city largely managed the storm without much ado. Assistant City Manager Bill Homka led the city's Emergency Operations Center, and he says the conditions did not meet the state statute for a declaration of emergency. Homka says there was some property damage in the areas around Lake Drive, but there was no major citywide damage. He says the city was successful because people pitched in to help one another.
So it really comes down to helping yourself and your neighbor.
The Kowalungan tribe offered to move tribal members into hotel rooms if their homes flooded. Two people accepted the offer, but most opted to stay in their homes. That includes Dushkin and Hatch out on the lake.
What would it take for me to leave? The water would be having to come into my house in order for me to walk away from it.
But the teacher down there, he's got a pump system going right now, and he's pumping the part of the water out through the drain system on the road. But I just talked to him a little while ago, and he said that he's going to have a friend bring over another one to put it on this side.
The storm finally broke on December 22nd after 9 days of nearly constant rain, making room for a cold front that brought the city a white Christmas. In Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
A Fairbanks hotel is developing an Aurora exhibit. The Aurora Discovery Institute at Pike's Waterfront Lodge, scheduled to open later this winter, will offer visitors a means to experience and learn about the Aurora year-round. KUAC's Robin reports.
On one of the coldest days of the winter, workers are wiring lights in a small building behind Pike's Waterfront Lodge along the Chena River.
So guests will always ask the hotel, will I be able to see the auroras from there?
Pike's general manager Liz Griswold says the hotel's new Aurora Discovery Institute will provide visitors an aurora experience even if they don't get to see the real thing. In the middle of a room is a 7-foot diameter rotating globe created by Seattle-based artist Eric James Morris. Morris, who's built globes for the Olympic Games and the United Nations, is checking projectors that shine colored lights at the top and bottom of the model Earth.
And I don't know that anyone's ever built a world globe that depicts the Aurora Borealis and Aurora Australis. So I thought, oh, what a wonderful opportunity to create something brand new and to highlight this spectacular natural phenomena.
The little building housing the globe was initially supposed to be a warming hut for the hotel's sledding hill, but hotel owner Jay Ramris saw another opportunity to entertain guests who often ask about the aurora.
And I typically low common denominate down to, well, if it's clear and it's cold and it's after 10 p.m., there's a chance you might see it. And if you see it, wake me up. And if it's not too cold, I'll go outside and look at it with you.
Looking to provide a more scientific explanation, Rammer says he came across Morris's website, earthball.com, and hatched the idea for an on-site 3D aurora display.
And so we wanted a building, our Aurora Discovery Institute, to tell guests and enthusiasts of the aurora how it works. And we think that this is a great STEM opportunity for K through 12 kids, summer and winter.
Morris's globe is made of 12 sewn-together fabric printouts of a composite NASA photo of the Earth. It's suspended from the ceiling at a 23-degree angle, the same as the Earth's tilt in relationship to the sun.
So it functions like a kid's, like a giant bouncy house, and the continuously operating blower inside brings in air from up above through the suspension tube. It'll stay perfectly inflated.
All over the globe, the lights from cities in the NASA photographs were enhanced by fluorescent paint. So in simulating night and the globe turns toward black lights on one side of the room, all the little lights come on like they do on Earth at night.
I owe a big debt to the space program and NASA, because without the cameras and satellites imaging the Earth from space, we wouldn't be able to create these authentic replicas.
Morris said it was a challenge to find the perfect simulation of the aurora over the globe's polar regions.
At first we thought we'd do it with luminescent paint like the city lights here, but it needs to be dynamic and moving. So I tested a bunch of different projectors and found these, you know, it's a pretty reasonable simulation of the actual aurora.
The globe will be surrounded by tablets on pedestals where visitors can project information onto monitors around the room. There are already interpretive signs and posters mounted on the walls, including panels from a World War II Canadian comic book.
One of the Canadian characters was Nelvana of the North. She was an Inuit princess, and we found her comic books and were able to blow them up into large posters depicting a superhero that, for all intents and purposes, is an Alaska native. And she was the great protector of the native people of the Arctic, their food supply, and the oceans.
Remmer says he's invited local scientists to an upcoming open house event to view the exhibit before it opens to the public. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Jeremy Shea and Michael Finelli in Anchorage, Yvonne Crumry in Juneau, Theo Greenlee in Unalaska, and Robin in Fairbanks. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, located in downtown Fairbanks, featuring hot breakfast, Wi-Fi, and a fitness center. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com. The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.